8, and this is the last section of part 1, the 10 precepts and lifestyle. Most order members will be familiar with the aphorism, commitment is primary, lifestyle is secondary. What its original source was and how it came to be introduced into the FWBO is a matter of some uncertainty. I may even have introduced it myself, in which case I have quite a lot to answer for. Since from the day of its introduction, the aphorism seems to have been the innocent cause of a good deal of confusion and misunderstanding. In the first place, it has sometimes been assumed that secondary meant unimportant or even irrelevant, with the result that the aphorism was understood to mean that provided you were committed, i.e. committed to the three jewels, it was a matter of indifference what lifestyle you followed, and that indeed no lifestyle was intrinsically better or worse than any other, and that to try to make it out to be so was a sign of intolerance. However, secondary most certainly does not mean unimportant, and when it is said that commitment is primary and lifestyle secondary, what this means is that the lifestyle of a Buddhist, i.e. of one committed to the three jewels, is dependent on, or follows from, or is an expression of the fact that he is thus committed, or, in more traditional language, that he goes for refuge. Reference to the dictionary definition of lifestyle will help to make this clearer. According to Collins English Dictionary 1979, lifestyle is the particular attitudes, beliefs, habits, or behavior associated with an individual or group. Since things like attitudes, beliefs, habits, and behavior can be either skillful or unskillful, it follows that the lifestyle which they collectively represent can be either skillful or unskillful too. Not all lifestyles, therefore, can be expressions of one's commitment to the three jewels. Similarly, with the 10 precepts and lifestyle. Just as the 10 precepts themselves are an expression of one's going for refuge, so one's lifestyle is an expression of one's observance of the 10 precepts. One could therefore say that the 10 precepts are primary and lifestyle secondary, though perhaps it would be better, for the sake of consistency, to say the commitment was primary, the observance of the 10 precepts secondary, and lifestyle tertiary, by which one would mean that although all three were of importance, the second was important as an expression of the first, and the third important as an expression of the second. Lifestyle, therefore, does not represent some ethically neutral way of life which can be combined without modification with the pursuit of enlightenment. For this reason, one's lifestyle is something that is open to criticism, so that one cannot, as a Buddhist, rebut criticism of such things as one's particular attitudes, beliefs, habits, or behavior with the indignant rejoinder, "Oh, but that's my lifestyle," as though this at once placed the matter not only beyond criticism, but beyond discussion. One of the main sources of the confusion and misunderstanding to which I referred is, no doubt, the word style. In the context of the visual arts, one can speak of the Baroque style and the Rococo style without necessarily implying that one is better than the other. Similarly, in the context of literary criticism, one can speak of a plain style and an artificial style, and in the context of book production, of the distinctive house styles of different publishers, without thereby implying the absolute superiority of one style over another. But one can speak of lifestyles in this way only to a very limited extent. In other words, very few lifestyles are truly neutral in character. One can indeed speak of a rural lifestyle and an urban lifestyle without necessarily implying an ethical judgment, but one can hardly speak of the lifestyle of a slaughterhouse man or of a prostitute, to take two quite extreme examples, without, as a Buddhist, thereby implying a very definite ethical judgment indeed. With this brief discussion of the 10 precepts on lifestyle, a topic of perhaps more limited interest than the 7 topics preceding it, we conclude our discussion of the 10 precepts collectively, and therewith the first part of this paper. The discussion of the 8 topics into which the whole discussion of the 10 precepts was broken down, has, I hope, helped us to achieve a more comprehensive view of the 10 pillars of Buddhism in their collective majesty. In the second part of the paper, we shall be dealing with each of the 10 precepts separately. This will enable us, I trust, to see each pillar in its individual splendor. As before, I shall try to avoid losing myself in details and instead concentrate on the spiritual significance of the great principles involved and on some of their more practical consequences. I shall also seek to enhance our appreciation of the splendor and beauty of the 10 precepts, not only by speaking of one pillar as a pillar of diamond, one as a pillar of gold, one as a pillar of crystal and so on, but also by explaining why a particular pillar is associated with a particular precious stone or precious metal.